Hello everyone. Today is Sunday, 2nd of August, and this is the translation of Pascal Girard's message, and I'm reading from the New International Version. Our text this morning takes us back to the days of the kings of Israel, in particular King Ahab, which remained in the annals of Israel as a model of corruption, impiety, and cowardice. So let's listen to this passage, 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 1-8. Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done, and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, "May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them." Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there, while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. "I have had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors." Then he lay down under the bush and fell asleep. All at once an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." He looked around, and there by his head was some bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank, and then he lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, "Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you." So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he travelled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. The first character of this text, Ahab, who reigns over Israel, the northern part of the kingdom, divided after the disastrous succession of Solomon. It is said earlier, in chapter 12, that Ahab did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, more than any that had been before him. And as it had been too little for him to sin like Jeroboam, the first king, who had reigned in the north after Solomon, he took Jezebel, daughter of the king of Tyre and Sidon, to be his wife, and he went to worship Baal and bowed down to him. Second character of the time, Jezebel, the first lady of the kingdom. She has gone down in history as the very symbol of prostitution. Queen of Israel, she heads politics in diplomatic and religious matters. Jezebel is not a Jew, she is a Phoenician, and her accession to the throne reminds the people of the sorry time when Solomon himself, at the end of his life, turned away from the Lord to build temples to the Phoenician deities. Ahab, by marrying Jezebel, only follows Solomon, and the people don't hold it against him. The most faithful of the Israelites will flock to the temples, to the divinities that the king will build. They quickly forget all their oaths of loyalty to the Lord and submit to Baal's bloodthirsty and oppressive idolatry. And here they are, making sacrifices and offerings to him, following the example of the kings. Around Ahab and Jezebel are the people of Israel, a very versatile people. One day they go to the temple of the Lord. The next day they will see such and such a god. Each day has its god. There's satisfaction for every particular need. The main thing is to make the most profitable choice, to serve the strongest God at the right time. This is why these people are able to applaud when fire from heaven descends to burn the bull in the competition of the gods, which is told to us beforehand. At that moment they fall face down on the ground and say, "The Lord is God, the Lord is God." Let us remember the challenge: to end a drought and find out which god is causing it. The priests of Baal and the Lord's prophet fight each other with prayer. A bull is placed on a pyre, and each invokes their divinity, hoping to be the first to unleash their champion's manifestation of power. The Lord's prophet is better than the rest. The Lord burns the bullock, and woe to the vanquished. They are immediately exterminated by the people. The same people who a moment ago praised them and mocked the Lord are now killing them and applauding the prophet. But it doesn't last. Indeed, when in her anger Jezebel wants to seize the prophet and eliminate him in turn, the people, opportunists, submit to the law of the strongest, in this case that of the queen, and abandon the prophet again. It is sometimes difficult to see the meaning of the word loyalty, but is it so different today? I have spoken thus far of Ahab and Jezebel, and of the people, but I have yet said nothing of the hero, of the prophet of the Lord, of Elijah. The one who mocked the priests of Baal, the one who embodies the moral conscience of Israel, the one who speaks in the name of God, the one whom the crowd hails as a hero because he brought back the rain. Well, let's talk about this hero. He is very tired. He who does not fear gods, magical forces, etc. Nevertheless, he fled at the first threat of Jezebel, who said, "May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them." Elijah does not even have time to savour his triumph, so he runs like a rabbit, fearing for his life, and runs to take refuge across the border in the land of Judah like a vulgar smuggler. He runs away and walks 40 days. He just goes anywhere or anyhow. He heads for the desert, this place of trial and purification for the faith, this privileged place of intimacy with God. He goes to Mount Horeb, the place where the founding and liberating word was given by God to Moses. It's interesting as a symbol. He returns to the sources of God's covenant with his people. And Elijah will take 40 days and 40 nights, a symbolic time, to reorient his life and make a new start with God. So many symbolic indications which indicate that the path taken by Elijah is not geographical, but first of all spiritual. It ranges from impurity, from idolatry, symbolized by Jezebel, to purity, to faith, symbolized by Horeb, and to his God in the wilderness. It is truly a return to the source that is at work. Elijah goes back to the origins of the faith of Israel. He goes back to the source of the values he claims to defend. Why? Precisely so as not to lose them. And what is our own journey? Do we know how to return to the sources of our faith, to find this intimacy with God who shows us a new path of fidelity? The prophet of God, Elijah, could have come to terms with Jezebel. Having emerged victorious from the duel of the gods, he could have profited from his material advantage of his increased power to establish himself as the king's advisor. He could have passed religious reforms, brought down all the idols of Israel, closed all the temples so that there would be only one worship, that of the Lord. Why didn't he push his advantage to the limit? Maybe because his God would be no more than a simple idol too. Elijah understood perfectly that the people acclaim him only because of the power manifested by his God, just as others absolutely wanted a sign to see that God was acting through his son. So there you have it. If Elijah lets it happen, we will believe that the people will have found a product more effective than the others, and this people will behave towards him in the same way as with idols. They will invade him with offerings and sacrifices for the success of their small businesses, for the good yield of their harvests, for the satisfaction of their ambitions, or for the happy solution to their troubles. But the God of Elijah is not that of that calibre. He is not a god in the service of human pettiness. He is the god of law, the faithful god, just and upright. Dealing with Jezebel would have been well done politically, but would have corrupted the ideal. The Eternal would no longer have been the same God. He would have been reduced to the rank of a magic potion that we drink if we have need. Was this the real reason for Elijah's flight? Above all, he was desperate to see that Jezebel was gaining the upper hand, and his despair was so great that to overcome it, God had to manifest himself to Horeb. Never renounce what is beautiful, great and strong in one's convictions. Never betray oneself. Never destroy oneself. Never renounce one's faith. Sometimes it becomes difficult to resist the temptation to let go, but there you have it. Surely there's a lesson we can learn from this episode in Elijah's life. So no, figuring it out was not easy for Elijah. He is like us. His first instinct was to flee. He didn't know how far he would go, and when he stopped the first evening under his broom bush, he was worn out, a broken man, crushed by his own cowardice, a man who realized that he was no better than the others. No, our hero is not. Like all the men in the Bible, it is true, he is really human, he is weak and helpless. His worst enemy is in his own heart. For him, this last blow is the worst. After having triumphed over idols, he sinks into discouragement and resignation. He's like us. When you have succeeded, or thought you have succeeded at something, and immediately afterwards you have to start over, as if you hadn't done anything. Until one day we say to ourselves, "What's the good of all this? What good are these difficulties? What good are these struggles for an ideal that may be too great for us?" Especially when, like Elijah, we are faced with Jezebels, or a versatile people always ready to eliminate the one they had just adored previously. Isn't this not the case with certain contemporary political figures as well? Sometimes with certain pastors, and generally with all those who bear responsibility. Wouldn't it be better sometimes to drop everything, starting with faith, with the most intimate, deepest convictions, those that have taken years to build, to test, when finally we realise that everything has never been but an illusion and that we are no better than the others, when we realise that no matter how high we are sitting, we never find ourselves only at one's own level? Isn't it better to stop everything, even if it means doing nothing more and wasting away? Elijah is no better than the others. For him also the Eternal remains a God who can be used. Death, that is to say, renouncing our faith, our ideals, our values, our relationship to God, would it not be the final solution to all our worries? We would then be like everyone else, cast in the mould of opportunism and compromise, like everyone else, so invisible and quiet. Act like I'm not here. In any case, this is what he thinks under his broom bush, our prophet. Moreover, Elijah no longer wants to be a prophet. He only aspires to one thing, to become a man again like the others, a simple inhabitant of his village, no longer having to fight against those stronger than himself, against the evidences of reality. He's tired, you see. He thought he had beaten the pawn of Ahab and Jezebel, and now they got the better of him. He must say to himself, "All that for nothing, so I can never be tranquil." He would like to keep his faith for himself in the secret of his life. He would like to go between the wall and the wallpaper so as not to be seen. But his life is to be a prophet. That's why he implores for the only salvation as a deliverance, death, and he falls asleep for a rest and eventually is tormented with dreams. This is where he will realize that his path is not over. What was only an escape into the desert of despair will become a spiritual journey that will allow him to discover another reality that he could not even yet suspect. Elijah, under his broom bush, tired, washed out, confused, destroyed, is in fact between two extraordinary experiences, that of the power of God which manifested itself against the priests when the fire of the Lord fell to consume the burnt offering, and the experience of the presence of God which will be manifested on the mountain. He has not yet seen or understood anything of what God is. The most extraordinary is yet to come. Now God will speak directly to him. On the mountain he will understand that the Lord is not the God of anger, of storms, of earthquakes, of fire, that he is not a vulgar God of convenience, a satisfying idol, that the Lord is not in extravagant thunder, but in a gentle whisper. Sisters and brothers, it is there in the gentle whisper and elsewhere that we must in our turn seek God, and not in great demonstrations of strength, and then to remain faithful to our convictions, to what drives us, to the idea that we have of man, and especially to the idea that God has of man. To remain faithful despite our weakness and our marginality in modern society. Remain faithful to the founding and liberating word of God who directs our life, always anew, towards the future. Word that founds and gives meaning to our commitments in the church and in society today. Far from arrangements and discouragement, we could each find our broom bush, this place of intimacy with God, to re-give a new direction to our life, that it is neither compromise nor flight, but a path of trust and confidence, and the faithful commitment to the service of God. I am not claiming that this search is easy. I am simply proposing to follow the teaching that God wanted to give us by passing on the story of the prophet Elijah. Amen.